Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media Podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as bonus content every single week, subscribers also get access to additional episodes where we respond to their best comments. Gain access to that content at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph. And with me are 404 Media co-founders Sam Cole.
Hi.
Emmanuel Mayberg.
Hello, hello.
And Jason Kebler, who is wearing one of our hats, which brings us to...
Our merch is back in stock. I ship it from my garage with hats, with shirts. We have beanies just in time for summer. it took a while to get them back from the printers. So we have hot beanies ready in case you're going to the Southern Hemisphere.
Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, the baseball caps are really, really popular, right? In black and green. I'm very happy I have one of each, but people kept emailing me, please put the baseball caps back in stock. Well, now they're there. But
it's terminal green. Terminal.
Yes, exactly. Probably, and this isn't even like a sales bit, this is just like a practicality tip. You should probably go quite quickly because they're already selling and we don't have that many. You know, we're not running, what's it, Redbubble or something over here? You know, finite numbers.
Don't know what Redbubble is, but we are not running Redbubble. I can assure you.
Is that a crappy service that like does printed t-shirts or something?
Yeah, we're getting them made in Los Angeles and then I'm shipping them from my garage. And to be clear, yes, we don't have that many.
Definitely call now. Operators are standing by. Yeah, if you order operators next, being Jason.
If you order in the next 15 minutes, I will ship it today because I do need to make a run today. So if you are a paid subscriber and you order the moment this comes out, I'll probably be able to get to the post office today. If not, I'll ship it tomorrow.
Yes. So
not that big of a deal.
Because subscribers get early access. I had to like figure out like people are going to hear this in the future after I've edited it. Okay. That will make sense. Let's start with one by Sam. Long lost song hunted by thousands found in 80s porno. How about I just play this audio first of all? Give me 1 second. Okay.
Such a bop. God, I love it.
Sam, what is this short snippet and how does this story start?
Yeah, so that is a piece of music that was uploaded by a user named Carl92 in 2021 to a site called What's That Song? So it's W-A-T-Z-A-T song. And, you know, before like Shazam, this is kind of like people would crowdsource songs. And people still do it for fun. You know, it's like Shazam is a lot less fun than like posting a song clip to What's That Song and seeing if other people can find it. So, yeah, a couple years ago, Carl92 posted what we just heard to that site and said that he was like experimenting with capturing audio and found that clip on a DVD backup, like with a bunch of other files, and was like, I don't know where I got this from. Who could say where I got this from? But maybe you guys know where it's from. Mm. And so since then, you know, it's like, that sounds pretty like run-of-the-mill standard forum stuff, but it was so impossible to find that it broke through that community and into like the wider lost media / lost wave enthusiast community. And yeah, and ended up being like this huge kind of mystery on the internet, people trying to find the origin of that song.
So what do you mean exactly? After the user uploads it onto that, let's say, dedicated forum for this sort of stuff, like they can't figure it out and it leaks out? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, they can't figure it out there. No one can figure out where it's from. There are a bunch of like theories going around. Like some people said that it was maybe like just like a jingle from a commercial, or it was from like a 90s MTV broadcast, or like just like a generic like sample music. And they started to narrow it down and said, okay, well, it's probably like the 80s just from the way it sounds and like the file quality and stuff. And then people started like posting.
How can you possibly tell that's from the 80s? I don't know.
Honestly, it sounds so 80s to me that like it's too 80s. Like it sounds like someone was doing like a mockery of the 80s, but it actually turns out that it is from the 80s. So they were close, but yeah, they couldn't find out, you know, where it was from. Lots of people were on the case, and ended up being a subreddit. They started calling it Everyone Knows That, is what they named the song, just shorthand. No one knew the actual name, but it's, you can hear in the song, they say Everyone Knows That as part of the lyrics. Mm-hmm. That's like some of the few words that you can actually like hear in the song. And so they started a subreddit called R Everyone Knows That. And it just became like a years long hunt for the origin of this particular song.
Wow. Wow. So it leaks out. And there's then a dedicated subreddit just for this song or this sample or this snippet. Mm-hmm. You don't go into super detail in the piece because I feel like it's going to be a very convoluted answer. So I'm sorry for asking this, but like somebody there starts focusing on a producer called Christopher St. Booth. How do they end up getting to that? Maybe even roughly, you know?
Yeah, so it was this big kind of like crowdsourced effort, right? So people were kind of banding together to find who made these songs. I think they ended up finding like a similar song that was like a lead from previously. It was like, you know, like a couple days before they actually found it, and they found the artist who had like similar songs. And then it was like a registry where he had registered other songs, and they had found him through that. And it actually turned out to be that he was making music for porn. That was kind of like one of his gigs. So he was, you know, producing original music to be used in porn, because you can't use, you know, like copyrighted music in porn films that you don't own.
I've never actually thought about that. That makes complete sense, right? That you need to have a dedicated industry for it for licensing reasons, right?
I mean, you could,
yeah, they put together that it was like his
famous songs, but it would cost probably a lot of money.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's like not in the budget of like an 80s porn producer, probably, who's putting together, mm-hmm. you know, a 90 minute.
Yes. So,
movie.
So they settle on this producer, Christopher St. Booth, as you say. It turns out their thing at the time is making porn. What happens then to find the particular porn film? Is somebody just watching all of Christopher St. Booth's material? Like, is that mm-hmm. basically what it boiled down to?
Exactly. Yeah. Somebody just went through and found each of the videos that he was like credited in, and then watched all of them, I guess. They didn't say how many they had to watch before they got to this one, but they ended up 1 hour and 7 minutes into the film Angels of Passion from 1986.
Oh, yeah.
Which is about horny angels sent to Earth to fuck, I guess. And yeah, they scrubbed through that film. They found it 1 hour and 7 minutes in, and they were like, holy shit, this is it. And it's playing in the background of a sex scene.
And since then, I guess there's like some final step, right? Where they hear the track there and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. this is where it's from. But then it's identifying, okay, well, what was the actual track, right? Is there any, because it's not that name you said everyone knows, right? It actually has a proper track. What was the song ultimately that was identified?
Yeah, it was called Ulterior Motives mm-hmm. by Christopher David Booth. He just He just used it in the background of one of these scenes. People had been posting like ripped versions from the porn video where they were trying to find like a full actual version of the song because in the film, obviously there's a lot of like moaning and sex sounds overlaid over
there's stuff getting in the way when I'm trying to listen to everyone knows.
It's funny because like some of the original like rips that came out over the weekend had the moans in it, and then people were trying to extract them. And I don't know how they were doing that. Like, you can do it in audio files, but the way that it was mixed, I would imagine they were using perhaps AI tools, which is kind of interesting because you would try to remove those sounds but keep the actual song. Ultimately, I saw that there's like a new rip that came out possibly today that doesn't have the moans, but I haven't followed it super closely since Sam's article came
Speaking of rips, I have one of them here. I don't think it's the one you're referring to, Jason, because this is probably from a couple of days ago, but this is when somebody found the track, right? And I think they just uploaded it to YouTube. I'll just play a few seconds of it if this is the right one. All right, I mean that's the soundtrack of the summer now, right? We have to.
It's so good. It sounds like a Kmart.
We have to get it trending, charting. Is that what they say? Trending. They don't say that. Get it on the Billboard top 50.
Yeah.
Did you know Taylor Swift has the top 14 songs on the Billboard 100 right now?
Yeah, well, not for long.
You know? Yeah, not for long.
Christopher St. Poof is coming, man. All right. I think that's fascinating and like a great little story about lost media. I mean, Jason, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about what this shows us about lost media, because you follow this quite a lot. I mean, not necessarily music, but you're always part of like the archiving discords and that sort of thing. I mean, what was your takeaway with this story?
Yeah, I actually want to, you said something a few minutes ago about how this guy just went through all of the films that this producer made. And if I remember the original Reddit post correctly, they were using IMDb to do that. Like, they were scrolling through. Which made me remember that right after we launched 404 Media, we wrote about Plex, the like cloud server that you can use to play your own films, and how it started leaking people's habits because it had like a share feature. And Plex was like really defensive about this and said it's not going to leak porn because there's not that much porn on IMDb. And there is a lot of porn on IMDb, which is interesting, but there's also been a lot of porn that's been like delisted from IMDb for this specific purpose. So that's just like melding of two worlds where this might not be possible when people try to erase the history of porn and of things like this. Like, in this case, we were lucky. This internet mystery was solved, but it would be interesting because that type of research wouldn't be possible if, you know, IMDb starts scrubbing adult films from its database. Anyways, I do write a lot about archiving and about lost media, which is sort of the official name for things that people know or believe exist, but are not readily available on the internet. And then when it has to do with songs, it's specifically called Lost Wave, which has become like a very popular thing over the last few years where people try to find really obscure songs or songs that were like a commercial jingle or on a game show or something, but aren't readily available on Spotify or YouTube or wherever. And they try to track them down and they upload them. There's a lot of places where this happens, like where people search for this stuff. Reddit is a big one. There's a bunch of message boards as well. And there's a lot of discords. And I just think that it's very, like a very fun internet hobby, more or less. I don't myself search for this stuff, but I do like follow the communities very closely. And obviously it's something that the Internet Archive, and in particular, like Jason Scott and the archive team over at the Internet Archive, sort of either officially or quasi officially connected to the Internet Archive, depending on which project you're talking about, where people go to like yard sales and they buy a bunch of floppy disks or vinyl records or old magazines or what have you, and then they digitize them. And it's pretty shocking the types of stuff that gets lost sometimes. Like, sometimes there are very popular episodes of like cartoons that will get censored in some country or will just get deleted off of, you know, the VHS tapes will no longer be in circulation, and suddenly you like can't find a weird segment of Pokemon or something, mm-hmm. which is nominally stuff that is like watched by millions of children and then suddenly just isn't available online. And it's interesting sort of like what gets preserved and what doesn't get preserved. I know Emmanuel has written a lot about video game preservation, and you know, it's really important to preserve video games. At the same time, like, video games are really well preserved because there's so many gamers who are dedicated to it, but then there's like all these other things that sort of fall through the cracks, I guess.
I mean, mentioning the video game specifically, that's the main one for me. And I don't think it's like as sophisticated or laborious as like trying to find this music that ended up in this porno. But pretty often, you know, maybe once a year or something, I'll just have a random childhood flashback of like a certain game on MS-DOS. And I'm like, what the hell was that game? And then I'm searching around for green alien, red hat, MS-DOS, trying to chuck in a year or something. And sometimes I fail, and sometimes I do find it. So I was like, God, I haven't thought about that.
Is that Cosmo's Great Adventure that you're describing?
It is exactly that. And that's one of the easiest ones. And then one of the more obscure ones is like Chaos Engine, which I don't even know who made that, but it was back in the age of shareware where companies would just freely distribute like the first episode of their game or something like that. And of course, that's how Doom became very, very popular, right? But they're similar to that. And I think you can find some of these all on Internet Archive or other sites. I mean, Jason, you just mentioned like episodes of, you know, certain cartoons disappearing and that sort of thing. I guess it's far too soon to tell. And maybe archiving efforts are kind of robust now, but like, how do you think the recent dynamic with streaming services plays into that, with like HBO just like scrapping a bunch of shows or whatever, or and Netflix doing the, I don't keep up fully with like what seasons have been taken off Netflix or whatever, but how do you think that plays into it?
I think that the end of sort of ownership, which is the name of a book that I read that is very good by Aaron Perzanowski, who is an academic, but the end of ownership is a very real thing, where we used to have a lot of physical media and there's not so much physical media anymore. I mean, you can still get it sometimes, but you just to stay on the video games train, it's like you can quote unquote buy video games for the Wii U, but if the server gets taken down or Nintendo decides to stop having the shop at some point, it's like you don't really own those digital versions of games that you purchased. And the same goes for ebooks. It goes for movies, TV shows, etc. And so when people think that they're just going to be able to stream everything forever, it's like, well, you'll be able to stream things as long as these services stay up and as long as they maintain the rights to stream them and so on and so forth. But unless you have that actual file on a physical, you know, medium that you are in control of, it can be lost at any moment. And we talk about this all the time with websites and social media posts and so on and so forth. It's like the internet really is not forever. But there are really like heroic efforts to make archives and libraries of this sort of thing. I'm on the Lost Media subreddit right now and just like filtered top from the last month. And it's like a really diverse grab bag of stuff that people are either looking for or have found or whatever. And it makes you just like realize how much stuff humanity is making. It's like script from an unproduced Seinfeld episode, a few you know, pilots from Disney TV show, all of these like YouTube videos from a really popular YouTuber, an acoustic jingle from a Blue Moon commercial in the 90s. Like, these are the types of things that people save and and like remember but can't find sometimes. And I think just like you said, it's like, well, I kind of have this vague memory of something from my childhood or something I saw 10, 15 years ago. How do I go find that? And is there going to be an emulator that can play it if it's a video game, or is someone going to have like the floppy drive necessary to back up, you know, whatever this thing is? And thankfully there's like a lot of people who are making sure that you can still view this stuff, but at the same time, it's like becoming harder and harder to find these things because there's just so much of it.
Yeah. I'm scrolling through what I think is the same site as well. And it's crazy. And I think I'm going to have a dig through this myself, because there's some wild looking stuff on here. Alien versus Predator stuff about the game. Anyway, I'm going to get far too distracted with that. All right, let's leave that there. That's a great story that opened up a whole world of lost media. We'll leave that there. And when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about sort of the conclusion to a story that were unfolded over the last week about Discord scraping and how those messages may be more susceptible to monitoring than Discord users might expect, right? We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. This is one I wrote, or, you know, there were two or three articles, but this was the latest one. Discord shuts down spy pet bots that scraped sold user messages. Jason, I think you sent this tip to me, right? Where did you see it initially? Reddit or?
Just saw it on the internet. No, I think I did. I found it in an obscure subreddit. I think I found it on the privacy subreddit. Someone just like posted it and said, this is crazy. And then we like looked into it. And then you did all the reporting to sort of confirm that it was working and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I'd be very curious to hear sort of how you went about confirming that this software tool actually worked, because when I found it, it was just a link to a website that said, hey, we are tracking Discord, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, and that is actually like how a lot of, well, not a lot, how some of our stories start, in that there will be a post on a forum, on social media or Reddit, and it's making like some wild claim, especially about a spying technology. I remember way back when there were always adverts on the dark web for like SS7 interception, which is when surveillance companies tap into the roaming networks used so people can use their mobile phones in different countries, and that's how you can intercept messages. There were always claims on the dark web that, oh my God, I'm selling this capability. And then as journalists, we would go and actually dig into it, you know, rather than just reporting this thing is for sale. And it would turn out to be bullshit the vast majority, if not all of the time, for that SS7 one. So you send me this post about this site called SpyPet. And when you go to it, it says that you can monitor a large number of users on Discord, something like 14,000 servers, around 4 billion messages collected. I can't remember the exact number of users, but like it looks like a lot of data. Maybe not a lot of data in, you know, when you look at Discord in its totality, but that still sounds like a lot of information that may be exposed. And what it was advertising was that for as little as $5, you could look up a specific Discord user. And if that user was in SpyPet's database, it would provide you with messages it had collected. It would say the server that those messages were from. It would say what servers this person was in. Which is very interesting, because I think we'll get to that in a minute, but that's something you can't do just by looking at somebody's Discord profile. And it even says, like, it has a little log of when the target joined a voice channel and when they left it, which I think is interesting because that's something that people would assume is really ephemeral, right? Like, yes, it doesn't have the contents of the voice chats, but when you join a voice channel, I think on Discord, you don't expect that that information could be logged by someone, or maybe in some people's cases is being logged by somebody. As for how we investigated it, you send it to me, I look at the service, and we did what we do quite a lot, which is try it out. And, you know, I signed up for the service, paid $5 or so in Bitcoin, and then I used it to look up particular users. Like, I think I tried to look at one of our accounts first and I couldn't find it, but there was one with a very similar name. So I just looked at that. To be clear, we're not going to really publish any of those messages from that person because, of course, you know, they're just an unwilling and unknowing user of Discord. But what I wanted to do was check whether the data on SpyPet was real, basically, right? So I look up the user, I look at their messages, I see what servers they're apparently located in, and then I joined those servers myself. And I was like scrolling through and searching for the messages and then finding a match. Then I do it again for the same user, find another match. Then I looked up another user, and I kept doing that until I was pretty confident that, okay, the data in SpyPet does correspond to real data on these Discord servers, you know? Emmanuel, I'll ask you actually, because I feel like you brought up this point when looking at the piece. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was you, in that something to stress is that SpyPet allows somebody to see their activity across Discord, right? And you use Discord a fair bit, probably more than me. Like, is that unusual? And like, why does that matter, do you think?
Well, I think the story in general is a good wake-up call about privacy on Discord. It's a very popular app, like, and is honestly very useful in our reporting. Every AI company that we cover, big or small, has a Discord. Every deepfake creator that I report on, a lot of them are on Telegram, but a lot of them are also on Discord. Yeah, non-consensual porn communities, hacking communities, just some of the people that you cover, Joe, they're all on there. And I think that because it's small, sorry, another good example is, do you guys know about like the Bumpers Discord thing? Are you familiar with this?
No, why is that?
So on Reddit, pregnant women who are due in a certain month, they're called Bumpers. So you have like Bumpers January, Bumpers February, Bumpers whatever. And they're really good, supportive communities, and the relationship get really intimate and good, but like close. So people move from Reddit to Discord and talk there. And you know, people are sharing pictures of their family and their babies and talking about like very, very intimate stuff. And it's like, it feels like you're in like this hidden part of the internet, this private part of the internet. That's how people operate, and that is what is useful to me as a reporter, because people are talking mad shit and I can see it all and I can just join and watch. Mm-hmm. But the ease with which you can join any Discord server also makes it easy to scrape. And that's basically what the story exposes. It's not a secret, right? But like, nobody has done it. And I think, I mean, that's what I found most interesting about the story, is that it's like, it's not quite like that, but it's almost like a peek into someone's, you know, text messages or group text messages or something like this.
Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, just because of the way it's scraping, if you're in a private Discord, or like a very unknown Discord, one that you wouldn't find, one that's not publicly advertised, you probably are okay.
Yes.
But anything else is just, I mean, you should just assume that someone is scraping that.
Yeah, you know? Because the way it worked was that, I mean, there's a very big list of like public servers, but then also it joined sort of publicly advertised invite links, as you say, and you just hop into those, and then you can scrape as much as you like. Yeah. I guess just on that point, again, Emmanuel, like, imagine how it would be if you were trying to find somebody on Discord, let's say, who was in one of these, I don't know, like, deep fake Discord communities, but you could see that they were a member of like five more other ones or something. Like, that would probably be useful to you almost as a reporter, right?
Right. Or it could be the opposite, right? It's like you see somebody in like a normal Discord, whatever, for like Helldivers 2, right? And then you pull them up and then they're in some sort of community that is either incriminating or just like incredibly private and exposing something about them that they wouldn't want other people to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hypothetically, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know any Helldivers fans here.
We
don't look me up.
Yeah, we barely play that anymore. Maybe soon. But yes, I think on the recontextualization of this data is really interesting. In the article, I point to an example I wrote years ago, like in 2016 or something. But a researcher signed up for, I think, OkCupid. They then scraped a bunch of users' like profiles, you know, their bios and that sort of thing, and their sexual turn-ons and blah, blah, blah. They then took that data and republished it elsewhere to be publicly consumed. And the academic researcher's defense at the time was like, well, you know, it's like public data. It was sat there waiting to be taken and for me to distribute. And people were very, very mad. Academics were mad at him. Users of the site were mad at him. OkCupid was very mad because I think they did a legal takedown request. And at least for me, you know, coming on nearly 10 years now, that was the point where I got really, really interested in how different data sets are like used and spread around and that sort of thing. Because on one hand, you can agree with the researcher and like, oh, well, it is data that people have put out willingly. On the flip, they didn't consent to it being shared like that, you know? And I think that's kind of what's being done here, is that I agree with you, Emmanuel, like you should assume if you're in one of these big Discord servers, your messages are going to be scraped. But I don't know if people know that. I don't know if people feel that. And I think a lot of people were pretty surprised about the existence of this service, which sort of brings me to what happened afterwards, which kind
I wanted to say one more thing about the bot, though, because the way that they were doing it was very interesting to me, just because essentially they like put bots in all of these different servers, and there are all sorts of bots in Discord, and many of them like provide some sort of service. It's like when you join a new Discord, there will often be some sort of bot that messages you to do like a verification so that you're not like spamming the server in some way. And so as a Discord user, I'm very used to seeing, oh, there's like a bunch of bots in here. I have no idea what they do. And I don't really think about the fact that there's just like various bots sitting in a server. And so I think, I mean, I don't know if other people think about this at all, but I have thought about like, oh, like there's like 30 different bots in this server. I have no idea what they do. And so I think that because bot culture is so common, like in Discord, like there's different bots that do different things. Like this service was able to join all of these Discords and probably not be detected as a bot that was stealing, like scraping the whole thing essentially, and then combining that information.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And then there's another layer to it, which is like basically deception, in that later on, Discord told me that the person operating these bots was doing them as like ordinary user accounts. So it doesn't look like a transparent bot joined. It looks like a user joined, and then they're scraping it as well, even though it is automated. But I totally agree with you. Like, you go in and sort of similar with Telegram to a lesser degree, but you don't really know what a lot of those bots are doing necessarily. But yeah, this person was allegedly creating these accounts to then go in and pose as ordinary users. I don't think that means, you know, posting messages, but it's easy enough to get an account in the server using the API and you start scraping messages, right? So we verify the data is real, as I said. We publish a piece, people react to that. But almost beyond the service, I'm like potentially more interested in how Discord could or would handle it, especially because the day or so after, I started getting these screenshots which showed that Discord has known about this service since at least February. And then when we published this piece, it was, what, mid-April at that point, right? It's like, why has Discord seemingly not done anything? Now, maybe they don't have all the information they need to act. Maybe they don't want to act. You know what I mean? Like, it's not our job to tell Discord to act. It can do whatever it wants. But it is absolutely our job to ask, well, you've known about this for months. Like, why have you not decided to do anything? Because that's a content moderation decision, a safety decision, even a cybersecurity decision as well, that these bots are able to do that. So I was very, very interested in that. And I do think they bear some responsibility around it beyond the scraping maintainer. But after that, we publish that, and then sort of a messy series of events happens that I'm only going to very briefly summarize. But there are two main things. The first being Discord shut down, well, it says it shut down a lot of the bots used by this service, so that they believe stopped some of the collection capabilities. I was speaking to the administrator before and during this, and I think they spun up collection. There were some they were doing some changes with the software as well. It's a little hard from the outside in trying to figure out the exact chronology, but there's sort of a battle going on between Discord and the administrator. And then the other thing that happened is that the spy pet domain was seized, taken over. Its owner was relieved of it in various different ways. And since the articles have published, if you follow the SpyPet Telegram, there's been a couple of updates about, well, they moved to this domain registrar and then they've kicked it off and now they had to buy another similar domain, all that sort of thing. I mean, we're not really covering the TikTok of that because it's getting a little bit in the weeds, but basically there's an ongoing dispute over the service and it's sort of up and down, you know. But regardless, I do think this acts as a reminder to people that sort of what Emmanuel was saying, you know, when you go to a Discord server and you think you may be in a living room, you're actually on blast. And let me just repeat that, because when I was speaking to Discord, they tried to give me this background point of, well, they tried to stress that, oh, this was only scraping public or known servers. So they used the analogy in their background points to me that, oh, it was more like people were talking in a public park than they were talking in a living room. And I'm like, I'm not using that analogy. Like, I don't agree with it. Like, this is happening on your service. And it felt like they were kind of pushing some responsibility away, to be honest.
I imagine, I don't want to excuse them in any way, but I imagine that it is a little bit of a headache from a policy decision, because Discord allows bots. Some of those bots are useful. They want people to use their API. The Discord connects to like Slack or connects to other services. You want to have all these like fun automated tools. And this is just like a version of that that is being used to some unseemly means. But I imagine they saw it. They're like, this isn't great, but it's like, let's think about it, until there was a public reaction and people got very mad and upset about what's happening on their service. And they're like, okay, actually it's an easy policy call. Let's kick it.
It's also probably technically difficult to do this in terms of like, I mean, there was a bit of a cat and mouse and an ongoing cat and mouse game, as you just mentioned, but it's like, they have to identify which servers, which user is the bot, how the bot was set up, so on and so forth. Like, it wasn't, as far as I understand, it wasn't like they were able to just like click a button and shut this down. It like may have been a bunch of different bots. They may, like, who knows? But this is one of the very rare ones where I do think that, you know, they've known about this for a long time and they should have taken action on it earlier, and it shouldn't have taken media coverage to do it, because as you said, they had been reported, like this site had been reported, they were aware of the site, but probably like technically it was quite difficult to remove these bots one by one from all of these different servers.
Joe, as our chief information security officer, paranoid in chief, isn't it fair to say that it's like they took care of this bot? It's an ongoing thing, but it doesn't seem like this specific tool is going to like get as good as it was. But still, like, if you're in a Discord or any type of online space that anyone can enter and also has enough people in it where it would be hard for you to tell who's coming in and out, that it's like, you just have to assume. It's like Discord did something, but that doesn't mean like, okay, now you can use Discord and don't worry about it. It's like, if you're in a Discord with like 100 people, 300 people, it's you can assume, or you should assume that it could, anything you say in there will get out.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, the risk might be higher now because people are like, oh, holy shit, I could do that, and I could start building a scraper for servers that that SpyPet doesn't cover, that but that I want covered, or something like that. You know, yeah, I think you're totally right in that. Sure, this particular service may be hemorrhaged for a bit, and now it's back, and blah blah blah. What, like, whatever, that'll keep going. But people need to absolutely still be aware that you post something in a public, or I would even say like a semi-public Discord, it can and might be monitored. And it's kind of the same with like the Telegram groups of the hackers and stuff I'm in. Like, a lot of those are actually technically public Telegrams. You just have to know where to look. It's kind of even easier to join Discord rooms because you could literally do like a specific Google search and you will find the invite links for Discord servers and you just join them. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's leave that there. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you're a subscriber, we're going to talk about an app Jason covered, which creates the false impression, let's say, that a user has tens of thousands of live stream viewers on TikTok and how that is being used to mislead people. You can gain access to that content at 404media.co. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist-founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and an ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers-only section where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and review for the podcast. Here is one of those reviews. 404 is one of the podcasts that I'll play immediately when there's a new episode. Real journalists doing real journalism that will get you stories before they're trending on Twitter. That was from Rye, I think. This has been 404 Media. We'll see you again next week.